Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Tuesday, July 6th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, and today we are reading from the Big Book. We are in Chapter 5, How It Works, and we're on page 69, the first paragraph. It starts with, we reviewed our own conduct, and we'll be studying that one paragraph only. And today's readers are Liz T., the 12 Steps, Laura R., the 12 Traditions, and our readers of the text are Leslie M. and Dana P. And the share ID for Monday, yesterday, July 5th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 17,289. That's 17289, and for this morning, Tuesday, July 6th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 17,296. That's 17296. And our newcomer greeter is Lois P., and our announcements person is Robin P. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer, our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Liz T. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Liz.
Hi, good morning. This is Liz T., a recovered compulsive overeater from Minnesota. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks for the opportunity to do service. I'll pass.
And thank you, Liz T. And I will now ask Laura R. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much. This is Laura R., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, create service boards or committees directly.
Laura, we lost you. Laura? Laura?
Do you want me to keep going with it?
Public media of communication.
Oh, there you
are. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Laura R., for reading the 12 traditions. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 69 in the chapter How It Works. The first paragraph down, it begins with, we reviewed our own conduct. And I am now going to ask Leslie M. to get us started. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Mo H. Thank you for your service this morning. I am Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. So in this paragraph, you know, we have just talked about our sex inventory. And I have to be really honest, obviously we're in the fourth step. And I have to be really honest, I hadn't had a lot of sexual encounters in my going. So I thought that this was going to be a really short inventory for me. And I was really nervous about it also. I was embarrassed to talk about it. But I found that, you know, now that, you know, it's just become a part of my story, that I can talk about whatever is in there. But I also found in redoing a fourth step recently that I had some other people that I had never had sex with, but that were, I found that I had people in my life that I wasn't comfortable being myself. I wasn't comfortable talking about the things that I needed to talk about. You know, I was in that, you know, I'm going to take care of them mode. And so I felt that I needed to put them into my sex inventory. And my sponsor asked me about it. And I said that I had prayed about it, but that I found that was the right place for them. Because I found that in relationships where I am afraid to be my honest, authentic self, that those are the relationships often, you know, where I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to be honest. I'm going to be lying. All my character defects are going to come up. And these things are going to happen. Where have I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? How did I hurt people? You know, I couldn't remember the lies I told, so it was hard keeping track of that. Was I inconsiderate? Yes. Did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Absolutely. And, you know, and so I took a look. It says, where were we at fault? What would we have done instead? And that's an important part of it for me now, is that I really take a look at those things and say, you know, what should I have done instead? So that the next time, if I'm in a similar situation, I have something else aside from my automatic reaction to pull out of my responses. Sometimes in the beginning, it'll just be, I'm not going to do anything at all. And another thing that I did, which did not involve having sex with anyone, was I did a lot of fantasy thinking about, people, about being in relationships. I'd meet somebody and within an hour, we'd be married. You know, so I had to really take a look at the way I thought about other people and, how they really were in my life instead of how I thought they were in my life or how I imagined that it would be. You know, so I had to take a look at a lot of my thinking about relationships in general, not just those people that I'd actually had sex with in my past. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Leslie Ann, for getting us started. I'll just remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 69, the first paragraph. We reviewed our own conduct, and we'll just be studying that one paragraph only. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Cynthia C.
Cynthia
Donna
C.
C. Donna, please.
Gotcha, Donna.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Larry G.
Larry G. Anyone else? I have Cynthia C., Donna B., and Larry G. If not, we'll... In lieu of time, we'll get started with those three. So good morning, Cynthia C.
Good morning. Thank you so much for moderating. Thank you for everyone who does everything to make this meeting happen today and every day. It was so perfect for me to get on this meeting this morning. And I heard literally precisely what I needed to hear today. And I'm so grateful. I am Cynthia C. from Newton, Massachusetts. So I'm a little out of breath. I'm doing a hike right now. I quit my job about 2 months ago. My last day was about a month ago now. It was 1 month ago. And I injured myself the first day I had free. So it's not been the time I thought it would be. And so I realize now I'm out today exploring nature and exploring all these beautiful parks where I live that I've never been in before. But this is perfect because I think about my husband. I need to review my side of the streets. And I think about, I've done my fourth step, but I work the fourth step all the time when I do my 10 steps every day and my 11th step for that matter. And, my husband really didn't want me to quit my job. He's always very nervous about money. And it got really toxic at my job. It was really unhealthy for me. And I was living in a phase of like trauma all the time. And he finally was supportive of my quitting, but he's like, you have to stop spending. So I've quit and I haven't stopped spending. So he's been very passive aggressively angry. And I'm in my head, of course, the lies in my head tell me it's all his fault, but I'm not cleaning up my side of the street. I'm not looking at my behaviors. And, this was so good for me to hear because I've been building up resentment after resentment towards him and doing 10 steps, but I'm not really, it takes a while sometimes to get to the deeper truth about why we do what we do. And I'm so grateful today to say, I can pray and I can ask my higher power to guide me. And I don't have to keep doing the same things that I'm doing. I don't have to live that, that model of insanity of, you keep doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results. So I'm not going to get... he's not in recovery. There's nobody else in my family who's in recovery. I'm the only one. And I love them all so much, my husband and my kids. But, I'm the only one right now who, it's up to me, whatever. I don't know what they're going to do. But I'm just grateful to know that I don't have to stay in that funk. I don't have to stay in this funk. I don't have to stay angry. I don't have to stay resentful, that I can talk to my sponsor. I can work the steps. If I need to do a deeper inventory on what I'm doing, and for me, the shopping is not so dissimilar to the food, and to my sort of compulsive codependency. And the only way I let go of my character defects is by praying and asking my higher power to lift them from me. So with that, I just Thank you so much. With that, I pass.
And thank you, Cynthia C. Donna B., followed by Larry G. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, Mo. So nice to hear you this morning. This is Donna B., spelled D-A-N-A, recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. I've been listening over the last few days as we've transitioned to that powerful sentence. It says, now about sex. Boom, boom, boom. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is where my concept of a sexual being came from. And I don't mean just who I am in the bedroom, but how I see myself as a woman. And I think as a woman with a history of eating disorders, I have objectified myself. I have very much been an object that I need to control, an object that I need to manage my weight, an object that I need to shame when breaking whatever diet I was on, an object that I needed to push in the realm of exercise beyond any, you know, normal realm of expectations of what a body could manage. So when I think about my part, how did I show up in relationships as a woman, whether they were sexual relationships or just any kind of relationship, I showed up with the viewpoint that I was an object. And that caused myself a lot of hurt, and it also caused hurt to others, because I really wasn't showing up as an authentic, vulnerable human being, a being, because I was an object. And that is something that I feel very saddened about. I had many years before marriage in which I was very promiscuous and carried a lot of shame about that for many years. And it's still something I do not like to talk about. But I keep showing up and I keep working the steps. And I have seen amazing recovery in my life now that I'm a married old lady. And I say that kiddingly. Thanks, everybody. With that, I pass.
And thank you very much, Donna B. from Colorado, spelled D-A-N-A. And before I take Larry, just remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 69, the first paragraph. We reviewed our own conduct. And after Larry, we'll be taking some more names. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service. My name's Larry G., and I'm from Northern California. Oh, God. We're talking about sex. It's like I almost rather chew raw glass than talk about this. But my sponsor asked me to comment on one of these days, one of these paragraphs this week on the sex inventory. This is a really hard one for me. I grew up in a big box religion, church religion school, and we had absolutely no classes on sexuality, and there was a lot of shaming about it. And so I grew up not being sure of myself, knowing nothing about sexuality, my own sexuality. And the first part of my life, it was pretty much, monogamous with one person, my former wife. And then I got divorced, and God, it was like I was like a teenager, mainline freedom, right? I became very sexually active, had a lot of experiences, And I'm not a player, you know, I'm not a player or predator, but I would present myself as this person who was capable of being intimate. And as soon as, you know, I was intimate, you know, I was out the door. It just scared that light, living daylights out of me. So when I did a thorough sex inventory in 2007, and literally what I discovered, some of it, you know, I was really ill, upset by my own behavior. And this is a challenging one to go make amends. There was people that I needed to make amends to. One of them, Santa Barbara, you know, is now married. And so the way I made amends, I contributed. She's a cheerleader coach for high school, and I made a contribution to that school. But I think what I want to say about this is that I have to caution myself. I think there's a realm of 12-step work to be done, and there's the realm of therapy. And I really believe that a lot of the work I've done in this area has been a therapeutic setting. I think I can go as far as I can go with the 4-step on sex inventory. But really, to do the deeper work, I feel very strongly that therapy is my best option, because it's so difficult to talk about. And we're lay people. We're not therapists. We're not counselors. We're not marriage family counselors. And I found I've grown so much in this area. And in the beginning, you know, in a relationship, sex was number one. I'll just put it right out there. It was number one. And today, I'm a happily married man. I love my wife more than life itself. And, you know, sex is we have it all. We have it all. We have physical, spiritual, and emotional marriage, but it's third or fourth on the list. Thank God for that. And I pass.
And thank you, Larry G. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who else would like to share on this paragraph, page 69, the first paragraph? We reviewed our own conduct.
Bruce E.
Bruce E.
Got it.
Got it. Thanks, Bruce.
Danielle M.
Danielle M. Who else?
Jordan L.
Jordan, okay. Anyone else? All right, we'll go with those three. We got Bruce E., Danielle M., and Jordan L. Good morning, Bruce.
Well, good morning, Mo. Thank you. Thank you for the subject matter. It just happened to come up in the book, right? You didn't invent this. Anyway, this is tremendous. Well, in this way, this Bruce E., I'm recovered in Florida, Southwest Florida, Fort Myers area. In this area, we tried to shape a scene. We reviewed our own conduct. I didn't want to read that. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Well, there's been a lot of conduct and there's been a lot of years. For age 18 to 38, I was single and used drugs and alcohol. I'm not blaming it for that, but just a lot of relationships. And it messed up my life. It really did. And why is this so hard to review our conduct? Because it's embarrassing. You know, I mean, this embarrasses me. And then there's shame and guilt in here too, right? But these steps uncover this and dig this out and get me well. And where had I been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Well, all those years, including first marriage, second marriage, I was selfish, I was dishonest, and I was inconsiderate. You know, I mean, you know, what did I do? Well, I told people this and I didn't, you know, I told people I cared about this or that or whatever, and I didn't, you know, or selfish, you know, wanted things for myself, you know, inconsiderate. This is the person I am. I am selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. And it carried it right through into the sexual relationships. whom had we hurt? I hurt everybody that I ever had sex with. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Well, in many cases, I did. Where were we at fault? I was at fault on these things, and because I was selfish, just the way I am today. I'm just absolutely a selfish person. So what do I do about this? Well, I work the steps through it. You know, I talk to my sponsor. I tell him what happened. I go through it. I put it on paper. And I apologize for that. I go to the people. If I can't find them, I write letters and I read it to my sponsor. And my sponsor said, well, how many letters you got? I get a lot of letters, right? All right. Well, he said, why don't you group your letters together? How about, and I lived in a lot of different places over there, 20, 30 years or so. He said, how about all those people in L.A.? Or how about all those people in New Orleans? How about all those people in Miami? He said, write a letter, all the people in Miami, and, you know, admit your faults and do an amends that way. And he said, I'll sit in on it. You do it with me. I'll sit. And that helped. Did it go away? No, it didn't all go away. You know, there's still some dirt in there and some gray area. But overall, it's been a lot better. Things are better. So thanks, Mo. I pass.
Yes, thank you, Brucey. Danielle M., followed by Jordan L. Good morning, Danielle.
Hi, this is Danielle. And I think for me, in my experience, that I grew up in a home where there was different standards for sex for men and women. And I grew up with very little knowledge. I mean, I didn't learn about sex at home. I was taken out of sex education classes. The church that I went to was not going to talk about sex at all. So it was just, I had no idea what it was. And my experience, at least my early experiences with sex and sexual behavior, was very hurtful to me. And so based on that information, I think I came into this program feeling very confused about sex and thinking that it was something that you use, that I used to hurt other people or other people used to hurt me. I didn't really understand that with sex, with healthy sex. And what I'm understanding is that it's not just the sex, it's the communication, it's the relationship, it's all these other things that go into it, and the intimacy. And I did not have much knowledge about that. And so I felt really grateful when I first started talking with my sponsor about the sex. I was like, wow, there's a sex part. I mean, I didn't think there would be addressing that issue. And I think of it as now is that it is important, and it's an important part of who I am. And it's important for me to have a healthy view of sex and what it means for me, and to be able to figure that out. And that's what the recovery program has given me the opportunity to start doing, is to look at what has my sex life been like, and what do I want it to be like, and what does a healthy sex life look like? And I needed help with that. And you know what? I think even as a child, I wanted to know those things, but there was no one there to tell me. And so it just felt like a whole bunch of pain. And so I am grateful for this opportunity and the sharing and people sharing about their different experiences. So thanks for letting me share.
Danielle, where are you from?
I'm from Virginia.
Okay, thank you. Danielle M. from Virginia. And before I take Jordan L., just reminding everybody, we're on page 69, the first paragraph. We reviewed our own conduct. And after Jordan, I will take some more names. Good morning, Jordan.
Hey, good morning, Mo. My name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Gunnison, Colorado. I'm grateful to be absent and on a meeting with you guys this morning.
So I when I first came into recovery, we talked a lot about sex. And it was good. It was good. It kind of like, I was really young when I came into recovery for the first time. So it got it out in the open. It was something where it was like, it wasn't taboo, you know, like I could talk about it. So I want to backtrack just for a second and point out the fact that it says we all have sex problems, and just like take in the humility of that. Regardless of what they are, whether it's too much sex or too little sex or not with the right person or with too many people or whatever it is, we all have sex problems. And then like progressing from that point forward, this is just like the other inventories. It's a moral inventory. It's not about right or wrong. It's not about whether I'm good or bad. It's not, there's no judgment here. That's what that sentence, that humility is meant to remove. We're not judging our sexual past or future or present. We're just taking a look at the facts, right? where is it that we had been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Who did we hurt? Unjustifiably aroused jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness, you know? And I start taking a look at this stuff. and it is, it's hard because sex is tied to like an instinct of survival, you know, of like the race going on and our legacy living on, because it's tied to like children and all that stuff, you know? So it's hard. It's hard to look at this factually, you know, like it really takes, it takes like a lot of practice, to start to look at this, more objectively and not so much tied up into things, you know, like I know as a youth, I was really overweight at a young age. And I got a lot of negative attention. I was either ignored by boys in school, or I received negative attention, like teasing. And, you know, the first guy I ever told I loved him, he made a joke out of it and told me he was gay when he really wasn't, you know? And that stuff hurt, man. I'm 16 years old. That stuff hurts. so what I do here is I start looking at it from a different point of view, from the facts, you know, and it starts to remove some of that baggage that goes along with it. And that's some heavy baggage. So it's nice to put it down, even if it's slowly, you know, a little at a time. Thanks for letting me share. No, that's all I got.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Jordan. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. And the lines are now open for some more shares.
Carol, hi, Kathy Z.
I got Kathy Z.
Gloria S.
Liz C. Audrey M.P.
Wait a minute. Who was that S?
Gloria S.
Got you, Gloria. I got you, Audrey.
Jody E.
Jody, got you.
Nancy L.
Nancy L.
L.
Yeah. Gotcha. We better stop there. Who was that last person?
Alexis F.
All right, I'll take you, Alexis. I don't know if we'll get to you, but I'll put your name down, okay?
Okay, thank
okay.
you.
I've got Kathy Z, Gloria S, Audrey M.P., Jody E., Nancy L., Alexis F. I don't know if we're getting to everybody, but we'll try. All right, Kathy Z, you're up.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you, everyone, for being here, all my fellows. Thank you for all the honesty. And it's just amazing just what sex, the word sex, just does. And I just love the honesty of our group here and the love and support that we give each other. I was really perplexed with this inventory. I just didn't know what to make of it. And to this day, you know, I've only been in program for about 18 months or so, but God still is revealing things to me. And so sorry about that noise. But, you know, doing this inventory with God and with my sponsor, I just felt really protected from shame, which was such a blessing because it helped me really take a look at my behaviors. God really shined light in shadows and revealed to me, you know, why I was behaving the way that I was. And it started from the time I was really, really young. I was always curious. I didn't have a father figure. I had an alcoholic absent dad. And so I was always looking for daddies. And I was doing that even with the principal at school. And I was also, I really appreciated, you know, the gift of touch in a healthy way. And I didn't get that from my dad. And so I looked for that, in males and had lots of father figures. But then as I started to get older, 11 years old or so, then I started to realize that certain behaviors would get me other attention. But I didn't know. I mean, I still wanted attention. And so that's what I used sex behaviors for, was getting the attention and then people pleasing on top of that. Because I would just get this identity from, oh my gosh, you know, I'm this or that, or I was able to produce this or that within that person. And so it was really kind of twisted and became very compulsive. I became compulsive with my own behaviors on my own, and then and compulsive in my behaviors with men. And I was a little bit promiscuous, but I was in very long relationships. But they were unhealthy relationships. And the reason why I was in those relationships was mainly because of sex. And so I'm just really grateful that God has revealed these things in myself and revealed through the pattern of my life how the disease of compulsive behavior has threaded in many different areas, not right. just food, but in lots of areas. So thank you so much for letting me share, and may God be at your side, front and back. Thank you so much. Blessings.
Thank you, Kathy Z. Gloria S. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning. My name is Gloria, and I am from Washington State, and I'm recovered compulsive overeater. This paragraph, you know, 4 years into a recovery, I found myself in a situation, and I'm with this person in a sexual relationship, and I realized I don't even like them. And I thought, what am I doing? And I said this out loud to my sponsor, and she said to me, yes, what are you doing? And she said, I don't believe I've heard your sex inventory. So this paragraph, what I did was I went back through my life, and I took every situation, every person, some of them I didn't remember their names, and I just put the person's name or this vague situation at the top, and I asked myself each of these questions. And especially this part here, what should we have done instead? And this is a, if I could go back in time and take the wisdom and the clarity that I have now, how would I act differently? And actually for all amends, whether concerning sex or not. And so many times I can't make that right. And it's kind of a sensitive thing too, you know, because people are married and, you know, is this appropriate to just all of a sudden burst into their lives and say, hey, remember, And so a lot of times, you know, it's a prayer, God, how can this part of my life be transformed into benefit for other people? And so many times I'm sitting in my living room with another woman, and it's time to share some of this stuff that, you know, you're not alone. We've been through this. And the other thing I want to say, I've heard just in the last couple months, boy, there are some Sunday special edition podcasts, and there's so much wisdom and experience, strength, and hope in those. I heard one by Lori C. talking about victim and victimizer, and especially it was so sensitively done in my perception of how to address the residue of being abused in a sexual relationship. So anyway, have a good day, everybody, and I pass.
Thank you, Gloria S. from Washington State. Now we have Audrey M.P., followed by Jody E. Good morning, Audrey.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, Team Tuesday. It's Audrey M.P. I'm calling from Southern California. And thank everybody who's shared before me. I've been listening. I was listening yesterday to both meetings, and I thought, oh boy, we're talking about sex. I'm out. Like, I don't want to talk about this. And when I think about what I've done in the past, and how I can do things differently. But I remember sitting in a kookaroo of all places with my sponsor, giving her my first sexual inventory. This was 28 years ago. 28 years ago, I gave it. Was thorough, and it took me a long time to write it. And I just had this big piece of paper, and every time I had a thought, I would be like, oh yeah, and you know, like it. What can I do differently? I want to know the person's name. Let's just start there. And it didn't matter because that was the only way I could connect. And it was so, you know, I think about my day yesterday, how I had a hard day. And sometimes I just like beat myself up if my food isn't like perfect. And then I think this morning I'm like having this huge aha, which has compelled me to share. What did it used to be like, Audrey? What did it used to be like? And all my heckles are up around sex because I'm not in a relationship. I haven't been in a relationship for a long time, and I'm on the Bumble right now, just creating a profile and saying who you are. I know when this law of attraction, and I think about sex, and then I think about just the intimacy. Like, to me, intimacy is like having a meal together. Like, I haven't sat on the sofa and Netflix and chilled in like forever. The pandemic is between us, between us and the world and this book and my feelings today. And I just want to thank everybody for having the courage to share, because this is ultimately, I don't know, this is like the intimate stuff in our heart that we share with God. And so my prayer today, I'm single, married, no kids. I'm getting older. I don't have to write a living trust because there's nothing to leave behind to anybody. I don't know how all of that stuff works. But I know this, and you guys have taught me that if I turn everything over to my higher power, things will happen like magically and amazingly and without any thought. And so as I swipe to the left and swipe to the right, I wonder, like, who can just love me enough to love me and my disease and my recovery so that I can get to this intimate place with someone? It's just like, I don't know. I'm kind of digging it right now. Thanks, Mo. Thanks, everybody. And I pass.
Thank you, Audrey M.P. from California. Next up, Jody E. And then Nancy L. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. This is Jody E., Grateful Recovering in California. Well, it is difficult to share on this particular paragraph, and it's tempting to want to be very vague and general about it, and I probably should be on this level. But anyway, yes, I have been selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. I have hurt people. I have aroused jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. I have been at fault. What should I have done instead? What a great question. You know, and I can look at all that. I can get it down on paper. And I don't have to beat myself up about it. We all have sex problems, or many of us do. And as has been shared, as children, we experience things that are not ideal. We don't have the picture-perfect family, and it has an effect. It takes a toll. And yes, we do go looking for love in all the wrong places sometimes. Some of us do. Not all of us. Some of us are faithful to one person our entire life. And that's a beautiful thing. But not everybody is. And I don't have to shame myself about my behavior. I can recover. I can change. And I don't want to swing so far to the other side that I retreat from all intimate involvement, mistaking sexual and emotional anorexia for recovery. I don't want to do that either. So thanks to the 12 steps and these programs, I'm finding a way to be intimate with people and to be vulnerable, share myself, be honest, and let them share themselves honestly and openly too. Taking all the time we need to get to know one another and not having to go to sex to be intimate necessarily. So what a wonderful road, what a wonderful ride this is. Finding a different, healthier way, recovering psychologically, mentally, spiritually, and physically. Thank you for listening, and with that I pass.
Thank you, Jordy E. Next will be Nancy L., and I think we may not have time for Alexis. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Mo. Good morning, everyone. It's Nancy L. in Arizona. Wow, what a review. What a way to clean house. It's the only way to clean house, as far as I'm concerned, is to really dig in and look at some of the things that I've been guilty of, but no longer carry the shame. Thank you, God. Because why? Because I have dealt with these issues in my life where I was so self-centered and selfish and dishonest and, you know, poor old me. All I was trying to do is just find someone to love me and accept me. But I didn't even love or accept myself. I was, you know, called names as a kid for being overweight. And, you know, I got that chip on my shoulder at a real young age. So, you know, it did become all about me. And I'm just so very, very grateful for these steps and this way out, that I can look at the past now and not regret it and not beat myself up over it anymore. That is so wonderful. So I get to live in today as a free woman that works at every day to be selfless and honest and have integrity. I'm not perfect, but I'm better today than I was yesterday. Thanks be to this program and to my higher power. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
And thank you. And Alexis, we have about a minute for you if you want to give a quick minute share.
Yes, thank you. This is Alexis F. Thank you, Mo. Thank you, group. In my first marriage, I thought I was a victim for a while, and then I victimized myself. And after I did that, my husband began to victimize me because he saw that I had no respect for myself. And then in my second marriage, and also in the first marriage, I aroused jealousy, bitterness, resentment, suspicion, And then the second marriage, as far as sex was concerned, it was handled as just raw nature. And I had looked at it according to the church that I grew up in as a loving relationship between a husband and wife for the purpose of making children. And, you know, time. Okay, thank you.
Sorry we had to cut you short, Alexis, but thank you all for your shares. Thank you all for your really sincere honesty. I really appreciate it. And we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer, and I will ask Dana P. to please read that a reading for us. Star one, Dana, I can't hear you.
There you go. Thanks, Mo.
There you go.
Dana P.
Oh, thanks, Dana.
Dana P. here in California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.